Let's talk about first what will be the topic of this series. What we're going to do is, Emirat Hashem, go al pi, it's not Kabbalah, but we'll go into the people who are the Jewish thinkers on the mystical school, right? As we spoke, who the mystical school is, we'll start with the people who became influenced directly or indirectly by Dari, by Darizon, right? Which are basically the mystics of the 16th century. And what we're going to do is to follow the mystical schools, which is the Shloh, the Maral, the Balatanya, right? The Groh, the Ramchal, all come into the same school, which is basically a development of the school of Dari, of that renaissance of Kabbalah in the 16th century, okay? And that becomes pivotal. Okay, I actually am starting a course at Penn on Agadah, right? And one of the things that we're going to deal with is exactly this. What happened in the 16th century that was such a revolution in Jewish thought? It's not only him, it's the Marshal, it's the Ein Yaakov. So this is a time which is pivotal. It's the beginning of this, even though the Zohar was already found, was already available for hundreds of years, but the renaissance of Kabbalah was in the 16th century. But not only was on the renaissance of Kabbalah was transported into Agadata, into the Agadata, which are the narratives of the Talmud. And finally, after being relegated to very secondary levels, until that moment in the 16th century, it becomes the Agadata, the narratives become primary. And there is a rereading of Agadata. And that's the Renaissance of Agadata. And we are going to focus on these thinkers. And the reason why it's important is because these thinkers, you see something, right? The 16th century is an amazing time. It's the beginning of modern science. The science that we use today, which is modern science, starts at that time. So the same way that today you cannot relate to science and to use Galen as your, right, as your medical book. If you look at going to go that, you'll be in deep trouble. So, but the thinkers of that time, we did use Pascal and everybody else. The thinking of Agadata also, you cannot relate to the people before. Their philosophy, etc., was great for their time. But for a modern man, for people, the thinkers of the 16th century on, 16th century onwards, right? 16th, 17th, and 18th century. It's a revolution in Machshava. It can help us be better people, be better Jews, and understand Judaism in Yiddishkeit in a much deeper sense. And therefore, we'll focus with them. And the focus will be to start on those mystics, the mystical schools, how they understood all of Mindset Bereishis, from Mindset Bereishis to all the stories that we have, all the evolution of the Jewish people up to Yitziat Mitzrayim. And we'll do little by little, yes?
Is there a reason that it started in the 1600s? That something happened?
Let me tell you what I think. See, Yosef, again, conjecture. Yosef Haim Yerushalmi, the famous professor of Jewish history at Columbia University, right, he was a celebrant on, he wrote a classic, probably one of the greatest classics in Jewish history. And the name of the book is called Zachor. And what he was focused, he was like professor, we're very close. It's actually in Jewish history is the most important monograph. I think it's a very short book. If you ever want to read something amazing, is that book. It's called Zachor. It's a reflection of a Jewish historian in the meaning of Jewish history. Okay? This is the classic. This book not only became so famous, people wrote books on the book, right? And Zachor, his idea, he was focused on something else. Jewish historiography, writing of history. We are very much against Jewish. Even though we have a mitzvah of Zachor to remember, historiography didn't happen by us. It didn't. We didn't have any historiography. If you look at, the Rambam says, history is divrei havai, meaning it's a waste of time, basically, to learn history. That's what Rambam writes, right? The famous Rambam, the rationalist says, is a waste of time. Now, and the history that we have were book of genealogies, like we have in Bereishis. This one is different. So we have also Shalsheret HaKabbalah. We have books of traditions. This guy received from that one. But history per se, historiography was not. But then in the 16th century, we have an explosion of historiography. We have so many books that came out. Oh, in the 16th century, we actually had 10 great books. The Shevet Yehuda, the Tzemach David. Great books of historiography come on that. The Malchei Turgeman. And the question is why? Why Jewish history becomes so famous in the 16th century? Nothing before. So his theory is that we went through a great upheaval on the 16th century, which was the expulsion of the Jews from Spain. Now, the Spanish expulsion, right, and the Portuguese forced conversions were very significant, not because they were the first of the expulsions. That's not true. The Jews were expelled from England in the 13th century, but because this was the end of the expulsions, meaning we were kicked out completely of Western Europe. And the Maccabi Patish, the final, the straw that broke the camel's back, was that the Jews were so settled in Spain, are forced out. And if you look at the books, this had huge impacts. It was a great change. And this caused an upheaval. So his view of the world is that. That this is what prompted this reflection. And that's why you have the mystics in the schools in Tzfat, focusing in the Shem Sender Rizal. And then you have all of these people in Europe who become these mystics because they are self-reflection. Right? So self-reflection, Kabbalah, self-reflection, history. That's what he says. In my view, it's a little different. In my view, it also has to do with the founding of the printing press. The founding of the printing press made Jewish books available. Before, each one had different parts. The canon, nobody knew everything. Here, you now have everything in front of you. So you're trying to make sense out of it. Right? So it becomes, Jewish learning becomes more available, becomes there. So that's a second issue, is the beginning of the printing press. That's number two. There's a third ring also, and you see this parallelism in history very much so. You see, this is the founding of modern science. Founding of modern science is credited to many historians by the famous book by Copernicus called Revolutions, which took the world and flipped it. And that's the beginning of modern science. So you realize that when you see modern science, if you take the Gemaras in the simple meanings, it doesn't make any sense.
You mean natural causal law?
No, it's not the causal. Modern science, definition of modern science, first of all, is the revolution to the previous beginning, right? In the beginning, people thought the world was geocentric, right? The world, everything around. Because if you look at the pshat in the Gemara, if you look at the simple meaning of the verses, that's what it says. Holech el darom v'sovev el tzafon. It says that the sun goes around the earth. When it comes that Copernicus comes with this revolutionary idea that the world is not like that. Actually, the earth surrounds around the sun. So, people are thrown the Agadah, if you take that literally, makes actually no sense. So it was, there were two schools of this. There was one school, even within the Jewish circles, that repudiated Copernicus. But there was a school that embraced him. And the mystics, headed by the Maharal, embraced Copernicus. How does he know? He didn't know Copernicus. But he knew a famous person who came to Prague. Prague was a very interesting place also. It was a magical place. The king of Prague, of the Holy Roman Empire of Moravia, his name was Rudolf II. And Rudolf II was a fascinating guy. He collected things because the discoveries, right? You brought things from Africa and you brought things from the Americas, so you saw those amazing things out there. It's a discovery. People were challenged. You saw new civilizations of people that you never met, right? The discoveries of the Americas. And this guy collected all of this. And one of the things he did, he decided to open an observatory. Now, this is an observatory before the telescope, right? Because the telescope is Galileo Galilei in the 17th century. We're talking about the 16th century. So he brought a guy called Tycho Brahe. Tycho Brahe was, he had a famous observatory in Denmark called the Uraniborg. And he was invited to Prague to open this observatory. And interestingly enough, he was able to measure through the parallax. Parallax is basically the measure of how the planets. He did actually, his measurements were found in the parallax of Mars. He followed Mars, right? Because he measured and followed Mars, and he came to the conclusion that you could not have a geocentric world. Did it make sense? So he adopted Copernicus, and he comes to Prague through learning. And at that time, like, the church was starting to get very angry. How can you believe in the heliocentrism, right, against the church? So he was like this guy, Tycho Brahe, if anybody knows him, he was a very smart guy. He realized he doesn't want to make a war against the church. So he decided to do like this, that all the planets go around the earth, the sun, and the sun goes around the earth, like the Shora, that all the planets, the entire firmament, all the system, the solar system goes around the sun, but the sun goes around the earth. Okay? If you want to make it happy, the Psukim fill. But he didn't believe in it. But so this is a famous story because the Maral, when he heard it, he was there. So there was a very interesting person who lived in Prague at that time. His name was Tzemach David Gans, the Tzemach David. And he went to spend time with Tycho Brahe, learning about those his observatory, and he wrote a sefer on it called Nechmad V'Noyim. Imagine, right? And he embraced it. Nechmad V'Noyim is something which is dear and enjoyable, saying that this is amazing science. And the Maral was very attracted to it. The Maral actually quotes Copernicus in Netiva Torah. He does Netiva Torah. He quotes him. And Maral's idea was that the Gemaras are not talking about physical events. It's not a history book. There is something much deeper meanings that they were trying to hide. So this is also. So modern science, the expulsion of the Jews, that they migrated to new ideas, the discovery of the Americas, that the printing press, all of it made together, that this was an amazing time, and this is where the mystical schools flourished. Hashem, everything comes in the modern science in the world, in Kabbalah, in Tzfat, and etc. And it's so amazing today, the scholars are seeing that there is a lot of similarities, non-Jewish scholars, between that, because those mystics, their books were translated into Latin. Okay, the mystics of those schools. So it was collected, and the book is called Kabbalah Denudata. Is the undressed Kabbalah. And this made huge impact on everybody. Isaac Newton quotes it. So this made an impact. So science made an impact on Kabbalah, and Kabbalah made an impact on science, and this becomes a flourishing. Today, all the scholars believe that this created, and it's fascinating to see how these two schools talk together. So there's too much to it. So Hashem made, and there was somebody who comes out, his name is Dari. And for 18 months, he teaches. He was a Talmud of the Shita Mekubetzet. He goes to Tzfat, and he teaches for 18 months, and he revolutionizes Kabbalah.
18 months, Talmud?
18 months. Dari was 18 months.
Who was the Ramach? What was Kabbalah for Ramach?
Yeah, the Ramach was the greatest Kabbalist.
It was a Kabbalah.
Yeah, but the real impact when Kabbalah becomes this mystical school and impacts everybody else is Dari. We're going to learn today the Shnei Luchot HaBrit, the Shlo.
Because he changes the nature of the
world. He revealed a deeper sense and many ideas that nobody knew about it before. It was really a new revelation. And the Ramak, the greatest Kabbalist of that time, was the Ramak, Moshe Cordovero, the Parallel Simonim, when he saw it, he says, this is true, and this is something that we've never seen before. So we had a huge impact for 18 months. And it's amazing, the story. We're going to learn today, we're going to start with the Shlo. The Shlo, the Shnei Luchot HaBrit, he was in the 17th century. He was the Rav after the Maral. And we're going to learn the Sefer that he wrote when he went to Eretz Yisrael. When he goes to Eretz Yisrael, he decides to go along the way to find the writings of Dari. Dari never wrote anything, right? He was for 18 months and he didn't write anything. It's all mediated by his students. And there's only one student that he believed that he really understood what he said, is Reb Chaim Vital. Reb Chaim Vital wrote the Pri Etz Chaim, and the Pri Etz Chaim was not allowed to go out of his house. So the Shlo went to his house in Egypt to look at it, and he says, I saw the Ktav Yad, the Ktav Etz Faradi, and I was able to see things that I've never seen before. So this is the impact. So we are going to learn, because I think that this is a very deep understanding, which is which is concealing. Once we learn the mystical school, you realize that gives you a different depth of Torah. It's consistent and concealing with science, with philosophies. It shows the depth of Torah. Now, you feel that you're not trying to fit a round peg in a square hole, and vice versa, because we've seen that enough. And people try, and it's not apologetics. Those are truths that we believe in it. And those are the truths that make sense. And the beauty of it is, as I told you, truth is experiential. The more you learn, the more you see it fitting, and the more you see it sense, and shows the depth and the value of Torah. And this is, I thought it had a huge impact on Isaac Newton, in Locke, in political science, meaning a lot of political science is built on those ideas. It's amazing. I thought this is the book translated into Latin and is already publicized in the Western world within 50 years of Dari. Can you imagine? It's an unbelievable thing. Next, Mr. Hashem, if I'm, what I'm going to do for next class, I'll be with the first edition of the Nechma Danaim, which is the book written by David Gans in his experience of the observatory in Prague, and you'll see how amazed he was on that. And I'll bring also the Kabbalah and Data. You'll see how the books, the first translation of Kabbalah into Latin, into the mystical schools, not the Zohar, but the mystical schools. And that we'll see. Yes?
There wasn't a resistance to being approached.
Not at all. And I'll tell you, in there are various reasons why not. First of all, you know the Zohar was printed. When all the Hebrew books were being burned, the Zohar was printed under the endorsement, the first Haskom on the Zohar was from the Pope. Right. Because they believed that those mystical ideas were very consistent to Christianity. And for sure, we're going to learn today where the mistake that they understood, that the Trinity was in Kabbalah. That's number one. Number two, the people that went were the... This is also... You realize how the world is going through. This is the beginning of the Counter-Reformation. This is the beginning of Luther. It's also... There's a Counter-Reformation. So there is a... Also in Christianity, there is this rebellion against the church ownership of the Bible. So this fits very well with the Counter-Reformation, right? And they not only that, modern science, if you want to tell you, I just want to digress too much, modern science had a problem. If you look at, there is a fundamental philosophical difference between early science and modern science, when you talk about modern science. Because early science believed that the world was perfect, and Adam, in the Chet Adam HaRishon that we saw last week, was the one who brought destruction to the world. So the world was perfect, and the world was destroyed by Adam. Which means that all sicknesses and etc. were a function of that. Which means that Galen writes in his book that the world, the body is made out of four humors. Four, basically, there's a cold, hot, and the body of the person is in balance. When you get sick, it's because something gets out of balance. The cold humor overtakes the hot humor, and then you get a cold. So what is the medicine? You drink hot water or hot soup. That's what the chicken hot soup comes from, right? Because the humors. But that works, etc. It works very well for a cold. But when you're talking about an infection, a bacteria, that doesn't work. Bacteria, you need to actually kill the bacteria. But the early science was stuck on this. You always had to bring the world to the pristine form, and the world, the body is perfect. That was Christian philosophy. The Reformation was against these ideas, that this is a made-up story coming out from the Greeks, and that has nothing to do with this. And Kabbalah is exactly the opposite. What the Arik says, and we're going to see this, is the role of man. We're going to see what is the role of man. And the Ari's role of man is that the world is just the opposite. The world is a world of tohu, which we're going to see here. It's a world of chaos. And Adam brings the world of tikkun. So we brought the world of tikkun. That resonated to all the scientists. Because if you read Pascal, if you read every single scientist, was the beginning of chemistry. That you went to make the world better. The world of tikkun resonated to them. Resonated to the Reformation. So these people were Protestants. They were protesting, so they were much more open to Jewish thoughts. So it's very interesting. They were not, I told you, Kabbalah, number one for them was very, very like how did the Madonna Kabbalah? Madonna says she's not Jewish, she's a Kabbalah person. The Kabbalah had this universal thing, the universality. That's number one. And the second thing is also because of the Protestants, right? There were the Protestants which were protesting and were trying to develop, and there was a big push to this new science, and that's the only thing. And you realize that the Christian church went against Copernicus, right? They were, that was, it's funny enough, in the 15th century, when Copernicus came out of the revolutions, was endorsed by the church. And already in the 16th century, it was already on the banned list, right? And it was, you got, that's why we all know Galileo had to recount and to basically give back, give up, not to be killed. It was because it was already part of the, what you call it, it was part of the Inquisition, right? It was part of the list of the Inquisition. So that was it. But this is the time, and this is the people we're going to learn. Okay, and the first thing is we're going to do is mind separations, because one of the biggest things, one of the worst things you could do with mind separations is to concord it. And concord it is basically look and take it down to our levels and take it to the plain meaning and to assume that the world is like basically take it to the lowest common denominator. And that's not true. We have a tradition how to learn mind separations. Rashi says in Chumash that the Torah didn't have to start with mind separations because it's way beyond us, like the Ramban says. So we have to learn what our tradition says about it. And the worst thing is to try to concord it and to make it assuming that this is 6 days and God hung things like a Christmas tree. That's not it. This is a very Christian concording. We don't believe in concording. So the idea is we're going to learn the deeper meanings, and we're going to see how it is. And it's the shir on Bereishis, star on Bereishis, is based, the predicate upon the Ramban. The Ramban says the Torah was Diber, the Loshon Ramban, and we're going to see it later. I'm just going to quote it here for a second. The Ramban says, Maise Medaber Batachtoinim Veromez Bailoinim. My separation is it talks about the world of the Tachtoinim, the lower worlds, but Roimes, but it indicates is a Remes in the world of the Elyonim. And let me explain to you what it is. In Chazal, and that's already starts, suffered its Nusa, the world is a scale. If you ever see Rosh Hashanah, it's a scale. You have two plates, right? The two plates keep themselves in balance. What is the idea of the balance? Is the world of the Maskala. That the worlds that we live, the worlds which are called the low worlds and the high worlds, are all reciprocals to each other. There is a reciprocity. They reflect each other. Whatever happens here is happening above in a higher form. This world and the worlds above are like two scales. That you move one side, the other side moves also. So this reciprocity of the masculine, that these things are in balance, is telling that the world of physical is a reflection to the world of spiritual. As in the Moshe. Once I asked Rabbi Shapiro, you know that they found, they have these new things that they went to the depth of the ocean. The ocean is 10,000 feet deep. And you see amazing fish there that nobody had ever seen before. Right? Fish that there is, if you go through, if anybody knows a little bit about what you call it, aquatic biology, you realize that there are amazing fish down there. And you think to yourself, man, if the world was created to serve Hashem, what is the purpose of those fish in the bottom of the ocean? Nobody ever saw them. So what's the purpose? What are they doing there? I mean, what a waste of life. And to say that's part of an ecological balance, it's hard to know an ecological balance in the depth of the ocean. But here we'll see, because the physical creation is a reflection of the spiritual realities. And sometimes on the physical sense, it doesn't make sense. It only makes sense on the spiritual reality. So the Loshon Ramban is Medaber Tachtonim Umerabez Le'elyonim. We will talk about the world of the lower worlds that relate to the higher worlds. We are going to focus on both. What is in the higher worlds, but most important is to understand what is the lower world, according to the mystics. In other words, you see that our world goes through a process to change. The lower spheres go through a process of change, according to the Mekubalim, from mind separations, and it goes all the way. And I'm going to show you how in Halacha that is true. For you to believe that Adam HaRishon was a guy walking the street, on the question Michael just asked, and he's himself on the world, and he's wondering, there's nobody here, and then the family starts growing, and for us to start thinking them, that is a made-up story. This is at best Christian. We don't believe this. The world of the Tachtoinim, and we're going to explore that. We want to explore what is the physical world of the world of the Adam HaRishon, and how that process goes, that they lived so long. what Chazal say. And I'm going to show you how this is true in Halacha, and this is true in Machshava, that the world of physics is not only the mystics. This is something very different, which goes into the idea of the dinosaurs, which is very important. And the idea of the world being billions of years world, when we assume it's 6,000 years, we have to understand what it means. But this, the mystics talk about it in extension, and we're going to learn about it, because it's important. Because it is preposterous to think that Adam HaRishon in Gan Eden was a guy like us, alone in the world, and you're just like with some kind of imagine. Imagine how depressing it is to be alone in the world, that there's a wife and you have nothing to do, and he just walks around for 130 years. And we have to understand that's not the case. And that's very, very important, including, we all know, that according to Dari, the first three parshiot, up to Lech Lecha, it's in a different dimension of physical. And you have to understand that. We want to see what dimension of physical we're talking about. And the Leshem will say very clear that the time, the flow of time is much slower in the dimension of Adam HaRishon. So the 6 days, they're 6 days, but they went much slower. Very much so funny to see that you see in the Ari, in the talks about once upon a time, I don't understand how it did. So the theory of relativity, right? Because the world and the speeds, but that's clear. I don't think there is anything we will learn about that also. So we'll start today, Mr. Shem, talking about the remnants of the Elyonim. What is in the spiritual sense, what is mind separations? So today we're going to focus, as much as we have time, although it's continuing 2 weeks, we're going to go into the world, into the word Bereshis. The word Bereshis is the word which is operative in creation. The word of Bereshis. So let's look, we're going to see the Sefer that we're going to follow, at least in the beginning, on this higher spiritual spheres of creation, is the Sefer of the Shlo. Shlo, I told you, is Rabbi Shai Horitz. He became called the Shlo HaKodesh. In the 17th century, he became the Rav of Prague, 4 years at the Maral, very well known, and he writes his Sefer, the second part, which we're learning now, when he went to what you call to Eretz Yisrael. The Balatanya writes Mipi Sforim Besoifrim. He wrote the Tanya based upon books that he never met the authors, and the authors, the people that he met. The books is the Adua, the way I said, is the Maral and the Shlo, and the Soifrim and the people that he met was the Bagid Medrash and the Baal Shem. So this is very fundamental, and that's, I think, is a great way to start. Okay? Says like this. Umitchila Akdim. The word Bereshit, the translation of Targum Yerushalm in Targum Yonasan, is called Bechokhmesa. It was created with Chokhmah. The Unkelus Tirgem Bekadmin, in the beginnings, meaning he translates into Aramaic, into the plural, V'lo Bekadmita. V'akol Olech L'makom Echad, and all the translations are all pointing to an idea. Kiromzim Bereshit HaChokhmah Shereshit HaMachshavah. He's talking the Reshit, the beginning, is the beginning of thought. We all know that the world was created with 10 utterances. The 10 utterances relate to 10 Sefirot, and that's what we're going to talk about. The 10 Sefirot are 10 emanations. God is beyond us. We can't understand. It is not possible to understand. But he created an image of himself and how he relates to us. These are called the 10 Sefirot Bilma. They are called the 10 Sefirot, which are the 10 Sefirot, the 10 emanations. Now we're going to see that what we're talking about here, Reshit, which is the beginning of thought, which is the first, which is the Sefirah number 2, which I'm going to say it's called Chokhmah. Chokhmah is the number 2. We're going to see, and this is the explanation, this is the famous treatise of the Shlo on explaining Chokhmah. Chokhmah is the beginning of thought, because the same way God creates Adam in the reflection of God. So you could understand how the spiritual realm goes by reflecting into yourself. The more you understand yourself, the more you understand Hashem. The more you understand Hashem, the more you understand yourself. It goes together, right? So, Bechokhmah, the Reshis means the beginning of thought, which is Chokhmah. Ve'achokhmah, Hilamet Beit Netivot Chokhmah. In Chazal, there are 32 paths of wisdom. We're going to see what the 32 paths of wisdom. Wisdom can go in 32 paths, because if you see, the Chokhmah of Reshis gets translated into a verbal world through 32 times the word Elohim that says Mamaisa Bereshis. It says 32 times Elohim, negative 32 in Chochmah. You realize that that's Chochmah, right? The Torah starts at base, and the Torah ends with a Lamed. Lamed Beit. The Lamed Beit is the Lev, is the heart of the business. This is how Chochmah becomes translated. And the idea of Chochmah is the kernel of wisdom. Rashi Chumash in Parshas Kisisa says on the word Chachomim. What's the definition of Chachomim? So Rashi says Chachomim is like a chenvon, is like a banker that takes deposits in, the people bring things to him. Chochmah is that it's called acquire wisdom. Nevoinim are the ones who develop wisdom. You take acquired wisdom and you polish and you define. Chochmah means acquired wisdom. And this is, but God can't acquire wisdom, so you're going to see what it means. Al-Kain Tirgum Unkelus Bekadmin Loshon Rabim. That's why the Machshova has 32 paths. That's why it's in the beginnings. It's not one beginning, because there are 32 beginnings. V'amar b'reishit b'tosefet beit. Now, why doesn't it say reshit? Why doesn't it say beginning was created? Why does it say in the beginning? So he explains, l'amar reishit she'achochma zeh b'yer ha-zohar. Look at how the Zohar explains. Why does it say the word bereshit in the beginning? V'zeh l'shono bereshit, beit reshit. Bereshit is two words. It's beit and reshit. Begin the iit inyana lechushbana. Because Chochmah is the number two on the accounts. This is not the first. This is the number two. The Ikre Reshit, but they still call the beginning, even though it's the number two, begin the Aikitrei law, because the crown, which is above the Chochmah, which we'll talk about in a second, Tmira, she's hidden, he Kadmo, and that's number one. So the number one is something beyond wisdom, but that's above wisdom, that's above the cognitive. That is something beyond. So therefore, the Chochmah is the number two, but it's called the beginning, because the beginning of the cognitive. V'aldo'el b'chushbna tinyona havereshit. So even though it's second, it's called beginning. Begin do beit reshit. That's why reshit is this duality. Beit means number two, and reshit means number one. So Chochmah is this duality, is number two, and is number one. And this is the beginning of the world. It's the beginning, and we're going to soon see how, in the spiritual sense, in the physical sense, there is a symmetry in the world together. Okay? Ubepar de shari insof. This is a typo. It's insof. Ha insof waketer. What's insof? God is the revelation of God. He creates us knowledge. The way to perceive him, to relate to him, revelation. And the first of revelation is to understand through our knowledge of him that he reveals to us. But he reveals to us a crown. You know what the crown is? The crown is above the head. In other words, he shows us also the infinite or the ineffable. The more you learn, the more how you realize that how much you're missing to know. It's not that God gives us a perception. He gives us a perception of the mysterious, of the ineffable, or the via negativa. So wisdom is the beginning of the revelation, but by knowing what you get, he's showing you also how much more there is to know. So that how much more there is to know, which is the crown, the God above knowledge, above experience. That is the one before the one. So Chochmah is the Reshit, is the beginning. But the more the beginning you realize that there is a beginning hidden from it, implied from it. So in the Sefirot, Keter is number one, and Chochmah is number two. But Chochmah is called always the beginning, because that's the beginning we can understand, relate. And we can only imply how much we don't know. And this is, by the way, this is the Ramchal says in the Kavonas, if we remember when we enter Rav Shabbeach, we say, Ushchinat uzo, Moshavi Karoba Shamayim Imal, Ushchinat uzo Begofim Rumim. We say God, his throne is above, but he goes and connects with something beyond the throne. God revealed himself to us. Who he wants us to know, but he revealed us to all to realize that there is, the more we know, the more we're missing that we don't know. He revealed us the ineffable. The more you know about him, the more you perceive how much more you're missing. That's why Chochmah is the number two, but it's called Reshit. It's the Reshit of revelation that tells you the ineffable. That's the greatness of what God revealed to us. God revealed to us something that the more, and I always say, do you know how much, how do you know how much you know? It's how much you realize that you don't know. If somebody learns something and feels that he got it, I can guarantee you that he didn't. Because the only way you get it is how much more is missing. Tachlis ha'idiyah shlameta, which is kayadua de keter. And this is what the word Bereshit. So Bereshit is this duality. Is Reshit, but is Beit. And this is the beginning of the creation in the spiritual sense. And you see that in the physical sense, it's so true. We are going to see that in the physical sense, that Chokhmah becomes something in the physical sense called Tohu. Tohu. This is the world. This is the Tohu. The Bereshit, there is the Tohu here. And you see something amazing, the Tohu. Today you see how the Ramban describes Tohu. That's with the purpose of the Shir. And you see how quantum vouches 100% for it. We all know the quantum is extremely consistent with our understanding of the physical Tohu. And the physical Tohu is a physical manifestation of Chochmah in the spiritual sense. And you see there's this reciprocity, which is amazing. But that's the idea. Okay? So let's go continue. Now, it explains the par de shar in sof hu akete per shlibiera mamar vezil shor. That's how he explains it. I'm going to go quickly because I already explained to you. Ki uk shelo bimira bereshit. It's the second paragraph. Ki a beit yigdolav yoromez lechochma knuda. The letter beit is a great beit, is a large beit. The large beit always is the letter that represents chochma. Why? Because beit is the house. The house is everything. Knowledge houses everything, encompasses everything. You can never grasp anything if you can't understand it. So knowledge is the big bait. The letter bait always relates to Chokhmah. So here is a repetition. Bait is Chokhmah, and Rishi in the Bereshit is Chokhmah. So the word Bereshit says the word Chokhmah twice. Bait is Chokhmah, and Rishit is Chokhmah. The second reshit is chokhmah. Piru shnehem romzim bechokhmah. Habeit kimifursam shu beit. The beit is the idea of chokhmah. Always, beit is what encompasses. If you want to put something into something else, it's called beit, right? Be, which is the idea of chokhmah. Vereshit kumro reshit chokhmah. And the pasuk calls reshit chokhmah. Chokhmah is always reshit. It's always beginning. Reshit chokhmah. That's the pasuk. ומתם כי מתוך זה הייתי אומר בראשית בכללה רומז בחוכמה רוצה לומר כי אין הרמז לחוכמה במילת ראשית אם לא שיבוא בבית הן בראשית. You could say maybe like this. The word בראשית, only בראשית is חוכמה. ראשית alone is not חוכמה. Or maybe only don't know בראשית. לזה יכריח. So the Zohar says no, כי מילת ראשית לבד רמז בחוכמה. The word ראשית, beginning is always חוכמה. You look at the Targum Yonasan. He didn't say that Targum of Bereshit is Chokhmah, but he pirish Bechokhmeta, Velomar Chokhmeta. Bechokhmeta, the Beit is not part of Chokhmah, it's a separate. It's a prefix. It's a prefix, it's the Beit Shmushit. Kinidia Beit Leolam Yeromezet Bechokhmah Levad Bevlad Bereshit. So the word, the letter Beit and the word Reshit both relate to Chokhmah. Shogankan is a Chokhmah. She pirish Natan Bechokhmeta, the Beit Shmushit. Right? It's a prefix. V'ine mitirgum yata mukhrach shel olam u kefel. This is a double. Bereshit is double usage of chokhmah. Ki reshit su chokhmata ve'abeit gam kervez la chokhmah. So the beit and the reshit both are chokhmah. Ve'ishiv, the Zohar explains, ala inyan na kefel b'nei ki milat reshit mori al atchala. The reshit means always the beginning. Ve'yan yireh shechokhmah tchilat atzilut v'reshito. So it appeared that God started revealing himself with chokhmah. Ve'zeino. The revelation is not from Chokhmah. The revelation is always from the mysterious, right? The mysterious, the revelation of the mysterious, of the lack of knowledge is the first revelation. The revelation is first the vacuum, first the empty space, and then he filled it with Chokhmah. וזהינו כי הכתר תחילת הצילות. The הצילות starts with כתר. לכן בא בעוד בית תחילתה. That's why it tells you בית. The ראשית, חוכמה is this, basically, it's almost manic depressive. It's telling you that's ראשית, but in ראשית, which is the two. It's a ראשית, but it's number two. So that is the duality of חוכמה. כי אומר, אף על פי שנקרא ראשית, כל זמן ששנייה למניין הספירות וכתר הראשון, חוכמה, is beginning, but the beginning, which is number two. וזה שכדבידיות עניון על חושבן, is number two. פירוש חוכמה שנייה למין הספירות, דקרי ראשית, פירוש נקרא ראשית. והוא מקום הטעות לפי אמת. This is the טעות of חוכמה. חוכמה appears to be always the ראשית, but in essence, and that is the goal of חוכמה. Every חוכמה that you don't realize that is the number two, that there is something beyond חוכמה, is not the real חוכמה. החוכמה, the Pasuk says, מאין תימוצא. You have to find that's מאין. Always, if you see a חוכמה that doesn't imply that's coming from something much bigger, and if you see a theory of everything that really has an answer to everything, you realize that this is false. חוכמה has to relate to that is the beginning of knowledge that tells you that this is the number two. There is something much beyond that you can't know. Okay? מפני שהכתר הוא הראשון והקודם, לכן הוא צריך לומר בית כנסיק בסוף דרם. The הכתר היא לא תמירה, that hidden knowledge, the hidden, the mysterious, היא קדמו, that's the beginning. תמירה מישוק שלו, כמו שלפי האמת היא שנית וראשונה, the כתר is hidden. Why? Because since he's number two and not the first, כי למה נקרא ראשונה? So why is חוכמה is called the first? שאין הראשית ואחר שהכתר מלס. If the כתר is before, why is חוכמה called ראשית? לזה אמר שכתר נעלם ותמיר, ואין מי שקרא ראשית. The כתר is something that you can't know. It's that ineffable. כי פירוש ראשית, זאת אומרת תחילת הגילוי, the beginning of revelation of God is always חוכמה. ותחילת הגילוי בחוכמה ולא בכתר, כמו שהוא בעזרת השם. לכן נקרא זה החוכמה, ראשית ולא כתר. Okay? ואם היות שאין ראוי לכתר להיות נקרא ראשית. So therefore, because the beginning, כתר cannot be the beginning, אם כל זה הוא אחד לצילוס. You can count it, but it's there. It's there and it's not there. Right? You know that the number one has something before, but you can't know what it is.
What tzilus is emanating?
Huh?
What is a tzilus? Emanation? Tzilus,
let me just tell you something. We are talking the world that Kodesh Boch revealed himself into four dimensions of revelation. And this is based on the apostle. Kol nikra bishmi v'lichvodi brativ yitzarti v'avasativ. Lishmi v'lichvodi, right, is the world of Atzilut. Atzilut is when God is reveals himself. Netzal is like something that emanates. Is the world of emanation. Is where the creation, the creator revealed himself. And then it goes into lower levels, and we're going to learn what the lower levels are. There are four worlds of spiritual dimensions. The first one is called Atzilut. The second one is called Bria. The third one is called Yetzirah. And the fourth one is called Asiya, the world of physical action. Our neshama has five levels of perception. We have the three lower levels of perception, which is the nefesh, the physical, ken nefesh wadam, that's the one, the physical, relates to what the basiya. The world which is a higher perception is the emotional perception, that's called the ruach, and that's world of yetzirah. Then there is the world of cognitive, of knowledge, that's the world of bria. And then we have the world of chaya v'yichida. Chaya is on the posuk, v'ya hadam lenefesh chaya, and yichida on the posuk, v'haya ke'echad mimenu. And the third world of Chaya is the world of Atzilut, which is not a cognitive perception, it's experiential. It's beyond anything. And the Yechida is the connection to the creator, which is called the Adam HaKadmon. Adam HaKadmon is the highest form of revelation. We're talking about Atzilut. Atzilut is that perception, the cognitive, the beginning how God reveals himself. The beginning of that revelation is Atzilut. So Atzilut is the idea of perception, the beginning of perception, the world of emanation, and then you go into lower levels of understanding and to get to the world of physical. So the whole world, all these four worlds are all connected. And we're going to see that today our realm, our theater of operations is in the world of physical. We live in the world of Asiya. We're going to see that Adam HaRishon, when he was created, he was supposed to be in a much higher form cognitive. And time travels at different speeds in each one of those cognitions. In other words, in the world of cognition, that's why if a person perceives, that's the idea of time. So time, this idea of relativity of time, Einstein already found this out. Einstein found that as the world, as you go quicker, right, you become, in other words, if once the physical goes beyond the physical, which becomes light, we all know that light is when matter becomes energy, right, which is that level above the world of physical, what happens to time? Time slows to non-existence. The Kabbalists will always say, the world of eternity is not that we live for eternity, but time will slow to eternity. Very different. It's not that you're going to have your 1 billionth birthday, right? People think they're going to have 1 billion years and they're going to live to no end. That's like very superficial. The idea is that with the same way if you become light, time will stop. And Einstein already has proven, and we have seen that enough times. By the way, this is Einstein's theory. Like, it's almost like Ruach HaKodesh, right? That it comes, that time slows as speeds increases, right? That has been proven, right? With atomic clocks ad nauseum. We've seen this. And this is, in Kabbalistic terms, always what the case. Yes?
Would that be equivalent to
Nitzchiut? Yeah, Nitzchiut is that. You see, the Nitzchiut is, we're going to say, almost like it's a victory. It's this idea of that the time slows to eternity. Right? This is the time slowing. So we're going to see that the Adam HaRishon, the Kabbalists say, it's like almost, it is, they even describe, Einstein always said this idea, right? If somebody takes a travel, it goes into a spaceship, and the spaceship is going at the speed, like half the speed of light, he'll come back. And for him, 10 minutes passed, and you're going to come here to the world, and millions of years, meaning everybody's dead. Because that's the relativity of time. So the Mikubalam will say that's exactly the same. Somebody told me that if you see this, it's like you look at some people, like Rashi. How was he able to accomplish so much in so little time? That's the same idea, right? It's almost the same, and the same idea, right? The elasticity of time. We all know there is such a thing, elasticity of time. Okay, I'm not sure if that's a part of Rashi, but you could understand Mikubalam saying that this is the different perceptions. So Nitzchiut, when you go to Lasid Lavoi, the Lasid Lavoi doesn't mean when Tchiyat HaMitim, when the world will be eternal, does not mean that you live for 1 billion years. That's shtuyot. Is that the time is slow, and you go to cease, right? That's why the Gros says, and we're going to see something, Bereshit, the word Bereshit, that we are now talking about the revelation of Chochmah. In the physical sense, what did it create? Chazal said that the word Bereshit is a Ma'amar. It's the first utterance of corporations. The word Bereshit is a Chochmah. What is the beginning of what? Says the Gro is the beginning of time. Bereshit is the beginning of time. It's the beginning of a process. That, in spiritual sense, is the creation of Chochmah. Because now you have a cognitive process. You could plan, you could do it. So that's the beginning of revelation. This is the beginning of process. This is the beginning of process. It's the beginning of Chochmah. But it's the second. God created the beginning with the inflection of the second. We're going to just finish this and we'll continue with the next thing. And you're going to see the Ramban says in Chumash that our bait, if you look at our bait, there's a chupchik outside of the bait. You know, the bait cannot be, if you ever see the bait, the bait is an amazing story. You're going to learn about the bait. Because the bait, if you're looking in the Ksaviyad, if you look in the Ktav HaShorit, the bait has a hidden pay inside. That's the aloha. The aloha is has to be a hidden pay. The bait is constructed with a hidden pay. But besides that, outside the bait, there is a famous story that the bait cannot be straight. It has to have a little chupchik in the back, which the chupchik is telling you that there is something above. That always, that kutsoi, is the Kutzo Shel Yud and the Kutzo Shel Beis, is a Dayu Keter, that there is something above and beyond, there's something transcendental, something beyond. So Keter, there's no letter for Keter. Is the number, is the letter Beit, is Chokhmah, so it's number two. But in the Beit, in the back of the Beit, there is something saying that she's coming from something much beyond. That's why every sefer, which is worth its penny, says are much more, the Kingal, when you read the Torah, he says much more than the just read, it's written here. Because Chokhmah is telling you, the more that you know, you realize that this is so much more to be known. And that's why he's the process. And this is the beginning of process, and we're going to see, Mr. Shem, now debate, and this becomes the Yud, and this is the mystery of the Yud, which is the beginning of Shem Shamayim, which is Yud Kivovke, is that Nikuda. This Chochmah is called the point. That's the point which is the Yud, and we're going to see that this is the mystery of the Yud, that the world was created, Chazal say, the Gemara Menachos was created because Shem Tzur Elohim was created with a Yud. And this is the mystery of the Yud, which is the creational concept of Chochmah, the concept of the process, and in the physical sense, you'll see how that translates, it comes. So have a great week. We'll see you in 2 weeks.